Chapter 18. The air was cold, and 70 feet above ground the breeze was a wind. It came in through the louvers and scoured his eyes and made them water. They had been there 2 hours, and nothing had happened. They had seen nothing and heard nothing except the clock. They had learned its sound. Each thunk was made up of a bundle of separate metallic frequencies, starting low down with the muted bass ring of the bigger gears, ranging upward to the tiny treble click of the escapement lever, and finishing with a faint, time-delayed ding resonating off the smallest bell. It was the sound of madness.
"I got something," Nagley called. "SUV, I think, coming in from the south."
He took a quick look north and got up off his knees. He was stiff and cold and very uncomfortable. He picked up the birdwatcher's scope. "Catch," he called. He tossed it in an upward loop over the clock shaft. Nagley twisted and caught it one-handed and turned back to the louver panel, put the scope to her eye.
"Might be a new model Chevy Tahoe," she called. "Light gold, metallic. Sun is on the windshield. No ID on the occupants."
Reacher looked north again. The road was still empty. He could see 10 miles. It would take 10 minutes to cover 10 miles, even at a fast cruise. He stood up straight and stretched, ducked under the clock shafts, and crawled over next to Nagley. She moved to her right, and he wiped his eyes and stared out south. There was a tiny gold speck on the road, all alone, maybe 5 miles away.
"Not exactly busy," she said, "is it?"
She passed him the scope. He refocused it and propped its weight on the louver and squinted through it. The telephoto compression held the truck motionless. It looked like it was bouncing and swaying on the road, but making absolutely no forward progress at all. It looked dirty and travel-stained. It had a big chrome front fender all smeared with mud and salt. The windshield was streaked. The sun's reflection made it impossible to see who was riding in it. "Why is it still sunny?" he said. "I thought it was going to snow."
"Look to the west," Nagley said.
He put the scope down and turned and put the left side of his face tight against the louvers, closed his right eye, and looked out sideways with his left. The sky was split in two. In the west it was almost black with clouds. In the east it was pale blue and hazy. Giant, multiple shafts of sunlight blazed down through mist where the two weather systems met. "Unbelievable," he said.
"Some kind of inversion," Nagley said. "I hope it stays where it is, or we'll freeze our asses off up here."
"It's about 50 miles away."
"And the wind generally blows in from the west."
"Great." He picked up the scope again and checked on the golden truck. It was maybe a mile closer, bucking and swaying on the dirt. It must have been doing about 60.
"What do you think?"
Nagley said. "Nice vehicle," he said. "Awful color." He watched it come on another mile and then handed back the scope. "I should check north," he said. He crawled under the clock shaft and made it back to his own louver. There was nothing happening in the north. The road was still empty. He reversed his previous maneuver and put his right cheek against the wood and closed his left eye with his hand and checked west again. The snow clouds were clamped down on the mountains. It was like night and day, with an abrupt transition where the foothills started.
"It's a Chevy Tahoe, for sure," Nagley called. "It's slowing down."
"See the plate?"
"Not yet. It's about a mile out now, slowing."
"See who's in it?"
"I've got sun and tinted glass, no ID. Half a mile out now."
Reacher glanced north, no traffic.
"Nevada plates, I think,"
Nagley called.
"Can't read them. They're all covered in mud. It's right on the edge of town. It's going real slow now. Looks like a reconnaissance cruise. It's not stopping. Still no ID on the occupants. It's getting real close now. I'm looking right down at the roof. Dark tint on the rear side glass. I'm going to lose them any second. It's right underneath us now."
Reacher stood up tight against the wall and peered down at the best angle he could get. The way the louvers were set in the frame gave him a blind spot maybe 40 feet deep.
"Where's it now?" he called.
"Don't know."
He heard the sound of an engine over the moan of the wind, a big V8 turning slowly. He stared down and a metallic gold hood slid into view, then a roof, then a rear window. The truck passed all the way underneath him and rolled through the town and crossed the bridge at maybe 20 miles an hour. It stayed slow for 100 more yards, then it accelerated. It picked up speed, fast.
"Scope," he called.
Nagley tossed it back to him, and he rested it on a louver and watched the truck drive away to the north. The rear window was tinted black, and there was an arc where the wiper had cleared the salt spray. The rear bumper was chrome. He could see raised lettering that read Chevrolet Tahoe. The rear plate was indecipherable. It was caked with road salt. He could see hand marks where the tailgate had been raised and lowered. It looked like a truck that had done some serious mileage in the last day or two.
"It's heading out," he called.
He watched it in the scope all the way. It bounced and swayed and grew smaller and smaller. It took 10 whole minutes to drive all the way out of his field of vision. It rose up over the last hump in the road and then disappeared with the last flash of sun on gold paint.
"Anything more?" he called.
"Clear to the south,"
Nagley called back.
"I'm going down for the map. You can watch both directions while I'm gone. Do some limbo dancing under this damn clock thing."
He crawled to the trap door and got his feet on the ladder. Went down, stiff and sore and cold. He made it to the ledge and down the winding staircase, out of the tower and out of the church into the weak midday sun. He limped across the graveyard toward the car, saw Froelich's father standing right next to it, looking at it like it might answer a question. The old guy saw his approach reflected in the window glass and spun around to face him.
"Mr. Stuyvesant is on the phone for you," he said, "from the Secret Service office in Washington, D.C.
"Now?"
"He's been holding 20 minutes. I've been trying to find you."
"Where's the phone?"
"At the house."
The Froelich house was one of the white buildings on the short southeastern leg of the quay. The old guy led the way with his long, loping stride. Reacher had to hurry to keep up with him. The house had a front garden with a white picket fence. It was full of herbs and cottage plants that had died back from the cold. Inside, it was dim and fragrant. There were wide, dark boards on the floors, rag rugs here and there. The old guy led the way into a front parlor. There was an antique table under the window with a telephone and a photograph on it. The telephone was an old model with a heavy receiver and a plaited cord insulated with brown fabric. The photograph was of Froelich herself, aged about 18. Her hair was a little longer than she had kept it, and a little lighter. Her face was open and innocent, and her smile was sweet. Her eyes were dark blue, alive with hopes for the future. There was no chair next to the table. Clearly the Froelichs came from a generation that preferred to stand up while talking on the telephone. Reacher unraveled the cord and held the phone to his ear.
"Stuyvesant?"
"Reacher, you got any good news for me?"
"Not yet."
"What's the situation?"
"The service is scheduled for 8 o'clock, Reacher said. "But I guess you know that already."
"What else do I need to know?"
"You coming in by chopper?"
"That's the plan. He's still in Oregon right now. We're going to fly him to an airbase in South Dakota and then take a short hop in an Air Force helicopter. We'll have 8 people altogether, including me."
"He only wanted 3.
"He can't object. We're all her friends."
"Can't you have a mechanical problem, just stay in South Dakota?"
"He'd know. And the Air Force wouldn't play anyway. They wouldn't want to go down in history as the reason why he couldn't make it."
Reacher stood and looked out the window.
"Okay. So you'll see the church easy enough. You'll land across the street to the east. There's a good place right there. Then he's got about 50 yards to the church door. I can absolutely guarantee the immediate surroundings. We're going to be in the church all night. But you're going to hate what you see further out. There's about a 150-degree field of fire to the south and west. It's completely open, and there's plenty of concealment." Silence in D.C.
"I can't do it. I can't bring him into that, or any of my people. I'm not going to lose anybody else."
"So just hope for the best."
"Not my way. You're going to have to deliver."
"We will, if we can."
"How will I know? You don't have radios. Cell phones won't work out there. And it's too cumbersome to keep on using this landline."
Reacher paused for a second.
"We've got a black Yukon," he said. "Right now it's parked on the road, right next to the church, to the east. If it's still there when you show up, then pull out and go home. Armstrong will just have to swallow it. But if it's gone, then we're gone. And we won't be gone unless we've delivered. You follow?
Okay. Understood. A black Yukon east of the church. We abort. No Yukon, we land. Have you searched the town?
We can't do a house-to-house, but it's a very small place. Strangers are going to stand out, believe me.
Nendick came around. He's talking a little. He says the same as Andretti. He was approached by the two of them and took them to be cops.
They are cops. We're definite about that. Did you get descriptions?
No. He's still thinking about his wife. Didn't seem right to tell him he probably didn't need to.
Poor guy.
I'd like to get some closure for him. At least find her body, maybe.
I'm not planning an arrest here. Silence in D.C.
Okay. I guess we won't be seeing you either way. So good luck.
You too. Reacher put the receiver back in the cradle and tidied the cord into a neat curl on the table. Looked out at the view. The window faced north and east across an empty ocean of waist-high grass. Then he turned away from it and saw Mr. Froelich watching him from the parlor doorway.
They're coming here, aren't they? The old man said. The people who killed my daughter?
Because Armstrong is coming here. They might be here already, Reacher said. Mr. Froelich shook his head.
Everybody would be talking about it.
Did you see that gold truck come through? The old man nodded.
It passed me, going real slow.
Who was in it? I didn't see. The windows were dark. I didn't like to stare. Okay, Reacher said. If you hear about anybody new in town, come and tell me. The old man nodded again.
You'll know as soon as I do, and I'll know as soon as anybody new arrives.
Word travels fast here. We'll be in the church tower, Reacher said.
Are you here on behalf of Armstrong?
Reacher said nothing.
No, Mr. Froelich said. You're here to take an eye for an eye, aren't you?
Reacher nodded. And a tooth for a tooth.
A life for a life?
2 for 5, to be accurate, Reacher said. They get the fat end of the deal.
Are you comfortable with that?
Are you? The old guy's watery eyes flicked all around the sunless room and came to rest on his daughter's 18-year-old face.
Do you have a child?
No, Reacher said. I don't.
Neither do I, said the old man. Not anymore. So, I'm comfortable with it.
Reacher walked back to the Yukon and took the hiker's map off the back seat. Then he climbed the church tower and found Nagley shuttling back and forth between the north and the south side.
All clear,
she said, over the tick of the clock. Stuyvesant called to the Froelich's house. He's panicking, and Nendick woke up, same approach as Andretti. He unfolded the map and spread it out flat on the bell chamber floor, put his finger on Grace. It was in the center of a rough square made by 4 roads. The square was maybe 80 miles high and 80 wide. The right-hand perimeter was made by Route 59, which ran up from Douglas in the south through a town called Bill to a town called Wright in the north. The top edge of the square was Route 387, which ran west from Wright to Edgerton. Both roads were shown on the map as secondaries. They had driven part of 387 already and knew it to be a pretty decent strip of blacktop. The left-hand edge of the square was I-25, which came down from Montana in the north and ran straight past Edgerton and all the way down to Casper. The bottom of the square was also I-25, where it came out of Casper and dog-legged east to Douglas before turning south again and heading for Cheyenne. The whole 80-mile square was split into 2 more or less equal vertical rectangles by the dirt road that ran north to south through Grace. That road showed up on the map as a thin, dotted gray line. The key in the margin called it an unpaved minor track.
What do you think? Nagley asked.
Reacher traced the square with his finger, widened his radius, and traced 100 miles east and north and west and south.
I think that in the whole history of the western United States, no person has ever just passed through Grace, Wyoming. It's inconceivable. Why would anybody?
Any coherent journey south to north or east to west would miss it altogether. Casper to right, say? Bottom left to top right. You'd use I-25 east to Douglas and Route 59 north out of Douglas to right. Coming through Grace makes no sense at all. It saves no miles, it just slows you down because it's a dirt track. And would you even notice the track? Remember what it looked like at the north end? I thought it was going nowhere.
And we've got a hiker's map, Nagley said. Maybe it's not even on a regular road map.
So that truck passed through for a reason, Reacher said. Not by accident, not for the fun of it.
Those were the guys, Nagley said.
Reacher nodded. They were on the reconnaissance run.
I agree, Nagley said. But did they like what they saw?
Reacher closed his eyes. What did they see? They saw a tiny town with no safe hiding places, a helicopter landing site just 50 yards from the church, and a black SUV that looked a little like an official Secret Service vehicle already parked on the road, big and obvious, with Colorado plates. And Denver was probably the nearest Secret Service field office.